Welcome to Ringside with Eric Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. I am your Colorado Avalanche beat writer for Colorado Hockey Now, podcaster for Mile High Sports. And for the fourth show in a row over the last 7 or 8 days or whatever the hell it's been for this season that has felt like it has gone on for 2 months already, I come to you the day after an Avalanche game to report on another Avalanche loss. And you know, it's kind of been a pattern here where I'm bringing out these podcasts every other day, recapping games. At some point, I'm going to kind of put it all together, get a guest on the show, and do like a broader picture, what the hell is going on with this team. And you guys could probably guess it, injuries, injuries, more injuries, and just the deflated team, I guess. But until then, I'm going to continue the trend of just breaking down the game. And I think for the first time this season, the Avalanche have something they can work off of. Because opening night, they played well. It was a pretty good game. But every time they made a mistake, it was in the back of their net. And there was a little bit there of like, okay, we kind of got this figured out, but let's see what happens with the goaltending. So then they come in for opening night and they have another pretty good game. They pull the goaltender. After they pull the goaltender, they score two goals before the freaking backup even faced a shot. And then when the backup faced a shot, they let in another goal. And you're sitting there wondering again, what the hell is going on here? You lose again. And again, you're questioning again, the goaltending. You go into the third game of the year, you know, and now you're really hurting. You really want something to get going here. Patrick Waugh's back in town, and you were outplayed. The top guys played like absolute crap. Kale McCarr took a lot of the responsibility for that game, and despite MacKinnon, Rantanen, and those guys were, you know, offensively, they put up points pretty much every night. I think Mikko missed a game, but other than that, they've pretty much had a point in every game. And by missed a game, I mean missed, you know, putting up a point in a game. But despite that, it wasn't really feeling great coming out of that Islanders game. It was like, okay, well, now the Avalanche are playing like crap. Their top guys are struggling. Devon Taves is hurt now. And you got the Boston Bruins coming to town, and that's not easy. That's not good. So then you go into that game against the Boston Bruins, and the way the game starts, you know, like Jared said, he liked the way they were battling in the first period, but the reality is they had five shots, and then he liked the way they were battling in parts of the second period, and the reality is they had five shots again. But then late in the second period, I believe it was the last 4 or 5 minutes, the Avalanche, in terms of shot attempts, shots on goal, plus shots blocked, plus shots that missed the net, the Avalanche were getting outclassed. It was 50-17 for Boston, and it was 4-1. And obviously, man, that second goal that came 13 seconds later from Hampus Lindholm, where he just fired it from the point and John Beecher was in front screening Alexander Georgiev, that was probably the backbreaker if you really think about it. But in those last 4, 5, 6 minutes, whatever the hell it was of the second period, Colorado turns it on. They had like two or three shifts where they really pinned Boston into their zone. The top guys were playing well. There was something building there between Mittelstadt and Kovalenko. They've been pretty damn good together. And Logan O'Connor on the other wing. That line, they seem to have something there with that line. And I'm curious if they stay together next game and how it'll be affected if Miles Wood is hurt. But they seem to have something there. And that line kept the Bruins pinned in their zone. And Parker Kelly and Callum Ritchie and these guys pinned them in their zone. The Avalanche's top guys pinned them in their zone. They scored a goal. They made it a two-goal game. It was 4-2 heading into the third period. And the shot attempts by the end of the period were 50-25. So Colorado got the last 8 shot attempts. And then they had a pretty damn good third period. They controlled play for the majority of that period. Mikko Rantanen takes that early penalty. What a freaking game for Mikko. I'll get into him in a second. But Mikko takes that early penalty. and then comes out of the box and starts battling instantly. He was steaming yesterday. It was a moose with smoke coming out of its ears. That's what he was yesterday. But he comes out of the box and he's pissed off and he's battling instantly behind the net. We're all looking like, oh boy, is this guy going to take another penalty? And then he gets cross-checked by Riley Tufte, which goes uncalled. And within the matter of like a second, he gets cross-checked, falls down, turns around, jaws at the official like, where the hell's the call? And the official's arm went up. And in the press box, we started laughing because it was legitimately like, I don't know what the view looked like on TV, on TNT. I don't know if the camera was up the ice by then. I don't know what it was. Because I do know the puck was up the ice. The Avalanche were going the other way by then. But the view from the press box of Mikko Rantanen getting cross-checked, looking at the official, and jawing at him from feet away, and the official's hand going up to call the penalty was hilarious. So he gets that penalty. The Avalanche go on the power play. 23 seconds later, who else but Mikko Rantanen makes it 4-3, and they started to build on that. They're rolling their lines. They're really hammering, keeping this team kind of, Boston. If you read any Boston recap from a Boston reporter from the Boston Bruins website, Boston Bruins beat writers, it's all talking about how Boston held on. Boston hangs on in Denver. Boston holds on for a victory because they did not have a good period to end the game. The shots were 14-3 for the Avalanche in the third. Ended up being 14-4 if you include the empty net goal that they scored off of a terrible turnover by Nathan MacKinnon at center ice on the rush. That sucked to see that happen. But you have this strong period to go off of where in the grand scheme of things as a whole, Alexander Georgiev, and I know I'm kind of jumping around right now, but my thoughts are kind of scrambling. Alexander Georgiev in the grand scheme of things had 21 saves on 25 shots. I don't love that 13 seconds where they score the power play goal. He has no idea, trying to kick post to post, has no idea where he is in his goal. And then it gets screened by Johnny Beecher. Clean look for Hampus Lindholm, fires it over him. Of course, you want your defenseman to clear out the zone, clear out the crease there, but it is what it is. In the grand scheme of things, 21 saves on 25 shots sucks. But as a whole, given the way the Avalanche played and how they were getting dominated and, let's face it, outclassed early in that game, Georgiev did pretty good. And it was the type of game you can build off of. So the goaltending looked better. On defense, you got to change something up because Oliver Shillington just isn't it right now. And I think it's got to be John Ludvig that comes in. And you're going to have to shake up the pairings. You're going to probably have to do Girard with Makar. You're probably going to have to do Ludvig with Manson. You're probably going to have to do DeHaan with Malinsky or something like that. God, that defense looks bad. But I still struggle to understand why they couldn't re-sign Jack Johnson for less money than what they gave Calvin DeHaan. A bit of a puzzle. I don't get that one. I still just, Oliver Shillington's kind of eating up a lot of the energy of playing terrible, but I don't love Calvin DeHaan as a defenseman on this team. I don't think he fits, and I'm not really interested in seeing if he can figure it out because he's lost a bunch of steps over the last few years. You knew what you had in Jack Johnson, and it's hindsight 2020. Maybe it's another deadline pickup like we all joked with him last Saturday during his media availability. But I don't understand that one. But regardless, whether DeHaan, whether Shillington, you got to change something up. And I think it's going to involve bringing John Ludvig back into the lineup because he's looked better than both those guys in his one game that he played. But Kale Makar looked much better. Sam Girard and Josh Manson were still the guys that you expect them to be. Sam Malinsky, I'll admit, has had a slow start to the season, but there's something there with him. And then at forward, the guys were starting to pick it up at the end of the game. They were starting to outclass and outmatch the Boston Bruins. They were starting to play a better game than them. They were pinning them in their zone. They were playing a strong defensive structure. They were playing a strong forecheck, keeping the puck in the zone. Power play, a beautiful, perfect 3-for-3, despite missing so many weapons. Val Nichushkin comes in, and then he's injured, and then Jonathan Drouin replaces him, and then he's injured, and Casey Mittelstadt's on the top unit. Now Ross Colton's on the top unit, and they're still 3-for-3. Against, mind you, a pretty good PK in the Boston Bruins. So maybe the penalty kill for the Avalanche on that matter, in that case, just really hasn't been great. But the reality is that in terms of the rest of their game right now, the Avalanche are doing well. They did well to close out that game, the final 23, 24 minutes. Unfortunately, per usual, they did the thing where they had to crawl back out of a 4-1 deficit, and that's tough. But they played well. And all of that was to say they finally have something to build off of. They're going to play the Anaheim Ducks. You know, we've been saying this for years. Everybody knows this. Jared Bednar always famously says this in his press conferences. I've been saying this for years. Many podcasters, you know, we're not really reinventing the wheel when we say this. But when you're in the middle of a winning streak and you're winning and then you're winning and winning and winning and winning, and then like as the winning streak continues, you start to get to those games where it's like, maybe you really didn't deserve to win, but you still squeaked one out and you kind of got lucky there. 10 games in a row. Oh, here's game 11. Yeah, you were outplayed, but your goalie stood on his head. Like when you get to that part of the winning streak where everything is going right for you, despite the eye test saying you probably shouldn't have won that game, that usually means your winning streak's about to take a downward spiral. That usually means it's about to end. That usually means reality is about to catch up to you. And we saw that last year. The Avalanche started 6-0, if you guys remember. And in game 7, I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure the Pittsburgh Penguins shut them out. I want to say 4-0. And that was a Penguins team that wasn't playing good to start the year. But it was something along those lines. I don't remember the exact score. And then shortly after that, you go into Vegas, you get blasted 7-0 by the Golden Knights, who were the 8th seed last year. But I digress. The point of this is to say, the opposite is also true. When you're in the middle of a losing streak and you have the type of game you had against the Islanders where nothing looks like this team has what it takes, nothing about this team looks like it has what it takes, the top guys are struggling in that, you're still stuck in a shitty rut. But when you have that type of game against Boston, I'm so sorry if this sounds like a glass half full podcast. That's not my intention. But when you have that type of game against Boston, that usually means your losing streak is about to come to an end. And just like how reality is catching up to you on the winning side when you're barely squeaking out those games you didn't deserve, reality is catching up to you that you're going to start to win the games you deserve. Anaheim Ducks in town Friday. This is the opportunity. You cannot close out a homestand 0-4 to start the season, especially for a team that lost, 9 times at Ball Arena last year. You're already a third of the way there in the first week of the regular season. You cannot, and just looking at it, it was 10 times, 31-9-1 last year at Ball Arena. But you cannot start the season 0-4 at home. You cannot start the season 0-5. This is your game. This is your opportunity. Coming off the way that you played at the end of the Boston game, the way that you erased a 4-1 deficit, made it 4-3. You just needed one goddamn 5-on-5 goal to go your way, and it is a tie game going into overtime, but instead you give up the empty netter and lose 5-3. This is your opportunity. The Anaheim Ducks are coming in. Yes, they're not the 27-win team from last year. They've been doing a little bit better this year, but this is ripe for the taking. It's a young Ducks team. They've played 3 games. They're 2-1. They've only scored 8 goals, but they've only allowed 7. This is your opportunity to go out there, score like hell, score at will, get some of these guys on the board for the first time, whether it's Gerard or Manson scoring their first goals, whether it's Kovalenko getting his first career goal, Logan O'Connor hasn't scored yet. Get some of these guys on the scoreboard. Parker Kelly, we haven't seen him score yet. Take this game and run with it. That's what the Avalanche need to be doing right now. They finally have something they could build off of. After opening night, there was still a huge question mark called goaltending. After the second game, there was still a huge question mark, again, called goaltending. After the third game, there was just a huge question mark. What is that question mark pertaining to? Literally everything, all of it. Like nothing was going well. Game number 4, the injuries are piling on. Miles Wood may or may not play. You're missing Val. You're missing Gabe. You're missing Drouin and Taves and Lehkonen, now potentially Miles Wood. Almost $30 million out of your roster, out of your lineup, if Miles Wood is not available. And it's not any better if he is. It's 27.375 if he is available, just from the other guys, Druin and Lekkonen and Val, Gabe and Taves. You're coming out of this game against Boston without that one huge thing that's given you pause. You're coming out of this game saying the goaltender had his best game. And I know, again, 21 saves on 25 shots isn't great. But defensively in front of him, had the Georgiev from opening night or the Georgiev from the Columbus game or even the Islanders game showed up for the first 35 minutes of this game, it wouldn't have been 4-1. It would have been like 7 or 8-1. The Avalanche would have been completely booed out of the building. Trust me. It was bad. I mean, you guys all watched it. It was the same game that I watched from the press box. You watched it on TV. Doesn't make no difference. Boston was outclassing the Avalanche. So the goaltending had a better performance, and he may or may not start against Anaheim. I'm assuming it's going to be Eustis Annan, but we'll see. I mean, if it's Georgiev, I really don't care at this point because I'm at the point where I think the Avalanche are going to play a lot of goalies this year, and I think each of them is going to get, you know, 10-plus games, whether it's Eustis, Kaapo Kähkönen, or some other guy that they pick up at some point. Maybe it's the guy in Anaheim, John Gibson, who's injured. Whatever the case may be, this is something to build on. You don't really have any question marks. You got to come out and lay the hammer on the Anaheim Ducks. Simple as that. With that, I do want to get into a couple other things. I do want to shout out Matt Steinberg. First career NHL game. Goes out there and drops the gloves with Nikita Zadorov on a play where Zadorov got the extra 2 minutes. On a play where the Avalanche obviously got a power play because of that, and it led to a goal. And when I talked to Parker Kelly after the game, he straight up said, he reinvigorated us. He gave us something to fight for. And I don't know if you guys have, you know, checked the game notes as a couple of podcasters have made famous for a hilarious story from junior hockey. Obviously the Spittin' Chicklets guys, but 29-year-old Nikita Zadorov is listed at 6'6", 248 pounds. You guys remember Zadorov? He was here for a little while. The guy's built like a vending machine. Like, he's a big dude. Matt Steinberg, I don't know if you guys have seen him in person yet. He's a little guy. 6'1", 182. You know, 6'1 is not short, but he's only 182 pounds, 24 years old. He held his own. He threw some, you know, punches. And then he did the right thing when he held Zadorov at the end and just kind of brought it down and said, let's just put an end to this. But he did what he had to do. So I did want to shout him out there. I also obviously want to shout out Cale Makar. Took responsibility against the Islanders. Comes out and has a strong game. I believe he had 3 points, a goal and 2 assists. Nathan MacKinnon had 2 assists. I believe Mika also had a goal and 2 assists. Quietly, Cale Makar has 8 points in 4 games, and it doesn't even matter. Quietly, MacKinnon has 7 points in 4 games, and it doesn't even matter. Quietly, Mikko Rantanen's got 4 goals and 6 points in 4 games, and it doesn't even matter. Sorry, 7 points, 4 goals and 3 assists for Mikko Rantanen. 7 points, and it doesn't even matter because they haven't won a game. But I loved seeing Cale Makar bounce back the way he did. I loved seeing Mikko Rantanen show that energy and that fire. I love what I'm seeing out of Ross Colton playing on the wing. I love what I'm seeing out of the Kovalenko-Mittelstadt pairing, and I think the goals are about to come for them. The problem is they don't like to shoot. Both of them like to pass, and one of them's got to start shooting the damn puck. Maybe the guy who has 3 goals, Casey. But even Kovalenko, it seems like he's got a lot of pause whenever it comes to shooting, and he's a good player. He's got a lot of skill. So there's a lot of things that the Avalanche did well. And on an individual basis, you know, despite the fact that they're dealing with all these injuries, this Anaheim game is very winnable. Then on Sunday, they go into San Jose. Then on Tuesday, Seattle. Thursday, Utah. Utah's a much better team. But these next 3 games are very winnable. Hell, Utah's winnable. Let's call it what it is. Utah's a winnable game. You got to be able to turn this around. It's got to start with the Anaheim Ducks. But yeah, I wanted to shout out Steinberg. I want to shout out Cale Makar. I did want to shout out Ross Colton, what he's doing on the wing. The pieces are there for this team to weather the storm. You know, if you guys remember, they won 20 of their first 40 games. They were 20-17-3 in the 2023 season at game number 40. They only won half of their first 40 games. They weathered that storm. They got to do the same here, but the difference between 2023 and now is they're about to get way more guys back than they did that year. You know, even if you don't include Gabe Landeskog, which you do now because his $7 million is on the cap, they didn't LTIR it to use on somebody else. Well, it's LTIR'd right now, but like it's accounted for. Last year, there was no chance to reactivate Gabe during the regular season. So I am going to count him, but even if you don't, Drouin, Lehkonen, Nichushkin, are you kidding me? That's a line in itself. You know, obviously they're all wingers, but those are three valuable pieces of your team. Three of your top four, top six wingers, without including Gabe Landeskog. Devon Taves on your top pair, second unit power play. A lot of guys missing from that lineup. So whether the storm starts with Anaheim, I'm going to put an end to the show here. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out you.